May it please the court, when a court makes a rule of zero tolerance, it all but guarantees that it will be compelled to exact a wildly disproportionate and unjust sanction at some point. It also sets itself up for an abuse of discretion because it commits itself to making any future decision based on its rule of zero tolerance rather than evaluating a claim of excusable neglect on its merits. That's what happened here. Dr. Shake tried his best to shepherd this case through the federal court despite being abandoned by two different law firms, and he was as diligent as he could be when his lawyers filed fatally defective summary judgment submissions in the summer of 2012.
Yeah, but you're stuck with your lawyer, right?
No. I think Pioneer Investment.
Bring a malpractice suit or something, but look, Judge Conley is not he's not an impatient person. He became exasperated by all these delays, right?
Well, he's not completely impatient, but he was a little rigid in this case. The better practice would be to do what Magistrate Crocker did, and say when he denied a motion for extension on the expert witness list, any future request for extension will have to be supported by an extremely compelling reason. That leaves room to consider a future request for an extension on its merits under the excusable neglect standard that's set forth in the Pioneer Investment Supreme Court case, where the Supreme Court said the negligence of your lawyer can be excusable neglect from the point of the party. There are a lot of cases that hold that a party is stuck with the misconduct of his lawyer, subject only to his malpractice remedy, but I think, as Judge Eschbach pointed out in that dissent that we quoted in our reply brief, those cases are largely superseded by Pioneer Investments, even though that line of reasoning continues to be quoted. I think the court has to take a good look at Pioneer Investments and say, do we have these elements of excusable neglect when we look at Dr. Shake's personal conduct? He was not going to prejudice the hospital at all. The hospital was going to have the same summary judgment submissions it had from the lawyers, except for one document, responses to their proposed findings. It wasn't going to hurt their ability to have a fair shot of winning their case. That's what I think prejudice means. I don't think prejudice means some extra work that they should have had to do anyway. There wasn't going to be much additional delay in the scheme of things. Dr. Shake was asking when he made his motion 2 weeks after the deadline was missed, he asked for only 3 additional days to file responses to the proposed findings. And it was going to take Judge Conley a year to decide the motion for summary judgment anyway, so in context, that little delay was nothing. The reason for his request for a short extension to file responses to the proposed findings was that for some reason that does not appear of record and which boggles the mind, the lawyers he hired did everything else correctly, but they didn't file responses to the hospital's proposed findings, and that left those proposed findings with an entitlement of being taken as established.
Well, is he suing these lawyers for malpractice?
That's a hard row to hoe.
Why do you say that?
Well, you have to prove that you would have won the underlying case.
The answer is no, he did not. So the answer to the question is no, he did not sue the lawyers.
That's correct. I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear the question. He did not sue. He's still within his statute of limitations, but he preferred to have his case heard here on its merits or heard in the district court on its merits rather than trying to seek a remedy against a lawyer for a procedural misstep.
Except your remark about the statute of limitations is run suggests that first he horses around in the district court, and after tormenting the district judge, then he'll bring a malpractice suit, right?
And Dr. Shake, if you read the defendant's brief in this case, it looks like somebody tormented the district judge with serial motions for extension and new scheduling orders. But you have to, the thing they leave out of their statement of the case is when Dr. Shake was represented by lawyers and when he wasn't. He had to start the case on his own without a lawyer. He was able to find lawyers after the case was well on its way. Those lawyers, understandably, came into court and said, we'd like a new schedule. That's not really Dr. Shake's fault. That was granted without...
He kept filing his own motions, bypassing the lawyers. Maybe the lawyers were no good, but it's very difficult when the judge is getting filings both from a party's lawyer and from the party himself.
I certainly acknowledge that, Your Honor, and that was the reason why one of Dr. Shake's affidavits was stricken by the court.
So when you drive, when you're incompetent lawyer, if we assume they're incompetent, they drive the judge crazy, and he imposes rigid deadlines. Then it seems to me the party's remedy is malpractice, not to both malpractice and a reversal of the district court.
I think the case law is that if Dr. Shake knew his lawyer was going to screw up on the responses to the proposed findings, there'd be some basis for that. But since he didn't know, I don't think...
Well, he certainly learned that that was happening, and then he starts filing his own stuff.
He moved to get rid of his lawyer very quickly. I'm going to save my time.
Okay, yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Olson. Mr. Aldana?
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Michael Aldana of Quarles & Brady on behalf of Grant Regional Health Center. Let me address a few of the points that Mr. Olson just raised. He called the district court's rules zero-tolerance rules. Well, this court, as recently as last week, has affirmed those allegedly rigorous and unforgiving rules on numerous times, and specifically the Western District of Wisconsin's rules. I wouldn't call them zero tolerant, or those rules as being zero tolerance rules. In fact, when...
What's the average time from filing to disposition in the Western District of Wisconsin?
I don't know what it currently is. The composition of the bench
has
changed.
They do still pride themselves on keeping a rocket docket. One thing that struck me about this case is that by the time Judge Conley said no more time will be allowed, this case was about 18 months old, which I think for Western Wisconsin is ancient.
It is. It is. By historical standards, it was an old case. So the defendant moved for summary judgment on May 21st. The court granted Dr. Shake's request for an extension of time until July 16th. More than doubling the normal amount of time that he would have. So hardly zero tolerance and hardly unforgiving. Dr. Shake, by his own attorney's admission, waited until July 9th, 1 week before his summary judgment response was to be filed, to retain that lawyer, Randy Enox. And then, as it turns out and as we see, there was a filing on his behalf. It was a response brief. It was proposed findings of fact, no responses to our proposed findings of fact. And again, to Mr. Olson's point, again, it was not unforgiving. The court was not unforgiving. The court did consider Dr. Shake's proposed findings of fact as though they were responses to our proposed findings of fact, and in fact didn't make certain findings, which we would say were otherwise unrebutted in the record, because of how it viewed Dr. Shake's filings. So clearly, that argument that the district court was unforgiving, there's no basis in the record for this. And as Mr. Olson himself acknowledged in his reply brief, assuming that this court upholds the Western District's rules as it has consistently, then the plaintiff loses, because the record before the district court, as Mr. Olson acknowledges, compels only one answer, which is on Dr. Shake's discrimination claims, there was no evidence of intentional discrimination. And let me just address a couple of other points. Dr. Shake brought a host of claims along with, besides his federal court claims, he brought a number of state law claims, intentional interference with contract, defamation, negligent infliction of emotional distress. He doesn't challenge the dismissal of any of those. Those were dismissed by Judge Conley based on the immunity provisions in the Health Care Quality Improvement Act. There were two other claims, that state law claims that he brought. A breach of state law claim, breach of employment contract. He did not address that in his principal brief. He devotes one paragraph in his reply brief to arguing why that should not have been dismissed. That's not sufficient. As this court has repeatedly said, an argument not made on the principal brief and reserved until the reply brief has been waived and in any event has not been fully argued. Similarly, Mr. Olson argues that the grant of summary judgment in the hospital's favor on its counterclaim for the $50,000 loan that the hospital gave Dr. Shake when he started his employment, that should also be vacated. Well, he never argued that in his principal brief, and again devotes approximately one paragraph in his reply brief. So, in light of all of this, it's clear that the Judge Conley made the right decision based on the record that was appropriately before him, and this court should affirm summary judgment as to all of the counts.
By the way, I've just looked up the answer to my own question. The median time from filing to disposition in civil cases in western Wisconsin is 8.4 months, beginning to end.
This was an old case.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Mr. Aldon.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Olson, do you have anything further?
Couple of things I want to respond to. The zero tolerance rule I'm talking about isn't the court's summary judgment procedures. They're not applied usually with zero tolerance. We cited an example of that at page 45 in our brief in the Stevens case where the court said counsel goofed when they didn't follow our local procedures. We're going to let them follow them now in a motion to amend so that the proper documents can be before the court. The zero tolerance rule was the announcement when Dr. Shake's father got sick and he moved for an extension on summary judgment submissions that there won't be any more extensions under any circumstances. That was the zero tolerance rule. Counsel says Dr. Shake waited to retain counsel an unreasonable period of time. We addressed that in our reply brief. There's no evidence in the record as to exactly when Mr. Enex was retained, but there's certainly no reason to assume that Dr. Shake was sitting on his thumbs when he could have gone out and retained a lawyer on a second's notice. Counsel says Dr. Shake's own proposed findings were considered by the district court as though they were responses. The district court says two different things about that. At one point it says it considered them in conjunction with the hospital's proposed findings. At another point, it says he considered Dr. Shake's proposed findings as though they were responses to the hospital's proposed findings. We addressed that in our reply brief, and we proved, I think, that the first one was true and the second one wasn't. The court didn't treat Dr. Shake's proposed findings as responses to the hospital's proposed findings. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Olson and Mr. Aldana.